All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Nobody Cares Anthony podcast. We had a little delay in episode releases because I went on an impromptu trip to the Azores.
For your birthday?
Not really. I mean, even want to say the age I'm turning. I turned 35. I don't really celebrate my birthday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, my birthday was not a motivating factor in going on the trip.
No.
It just happened to be around the same time as it. But I do that sometimes. Once I get that idea in my head or like an idea in my head, I have to execute it.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, this is when like your job as the co-host, it would be really great if you were like, "Oh, how was the trip?" Because obviously like I started talking about the trip and like, let's talk about the trip. But like, this is your cue to be like, oh, tell me about the trip instead of just like, you know what I mean?
I was expecting you to go there anyway.
No, but let's start over.
Okay, sorry.
We're going to leave all this in, but just like, let's not leave it in. Let's just start fresh. Let's not start fresh. Okay, let's leave this in so the people can see the creative process.
All right, I like it.
But like, I think as time goes on, we'll both get better at it because I don't want to talk the whole time. I want you to talk a little bit.
Okay.
But you need to be more than just what are those things in the store they put the clothes on? Mannequin. You know what I mean? So we'll try again. All right, ready? 5, 4, 3, 2. All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Nobody Cares Anthony podcast. What's going on, Packy?
Oh, you know, just another great day. Really chilly. Really chilly out there.
Great. Yeah. I mean, we missed an episode last week because I went on a little impromptu trip to the Azores.
That's awesome. How was your trip?
Glad you asked. Thanks for asking, dude. It was kind of cool. You know what I mean? I just to be clear, you know, I know it was like around my birthday, but I didn't go for my birthday.
It was a
great trip. But before I get into like the details of the trip, can we just talk about airports?
Oh, they're germ-infested aggravations.
I mean, there's a long list of things that are wrong with them. And I just, because I'm one of those people where I'm observant and, you know, I'm always looking for like, what's the bit here? Like, what's the rant I can go on about what we're doing here?
There's so many.
And there's so many at the, because I was, for one, for starters, I was a very nervous flyer up until maybe 3 years ago when I started. Because they say the only way to get over your fear of flying is to fly. And I started going on a lot more trips. And so I've kind of gotten way better, but I can do turbulence. The one thing that I can't do is that roller coaster drop.
I don't mind it.
Oh, I don't like I don't it mind at it. All, dude. I don't like it at all. Is that I let out like, oh, fuck. Like, oh, wow.
Do you imagine that feeling if the plane was actually going down? It'd be that feeling for just, what, 10 minutes, 5 minutes of just.
I think I'd have a heart attack. Because there's levels to the drop.
Yeah.
This one was like a, ooh, like it was like a little bit longer than just your quick little boop, boop.
Ooh.
And I let out like a, oh, fuck. I felt like such a vagine, dude. Because you know what I mean? Because everyone else was kind of like, oh, a little bit. Then it like goes away. And I was so visibly stressed out. But one thing that drove me crazy was on the return flight. During what's the carousel where you get your
baggage claim. Yeah.
The way people hover the baggage claim.
Nobody else is taking your bag, dude. Just wait.
Nobody's taking it. And also, like, if you don't have like if your daughter's not like about to give birth and you're gonna miss your grandson being born or like you have but like connecting flights, they take the luggage for you, right? So you're not there for connecting flights, right? It goes around again. If you miss it, like say you see it, but like you're not in a position to grab it right away, you can just walk down and kind of follow it and grab it. Well, guess what? It comes back around. They don't put it back on the plane. It's not like, hey, you got one chance to grab it or it's going back on the plane and it's going back to freaking Costa Rica. No, it comes around again.
See, that's where I feel like there should be rules to it where if there's a woman that's 5 foot nothing, you should be in the front. You get your bag. If someone who's 6'7" should be in the back looking for their bag, say, oh, there it is. And then when it starts to come around, when it's coming around there, if you're standing here, you go, excuse me, I see mine coming. Excuse me. Get to the front, grab it, go.
Well, it's also when you crowd it, right? When your shin is touching the turn thing, the carousel, what happens is now everybody needs to push forward and everybody needs to kind of look over because you can't see and you need to hover and then it's all crowded. But if everyone just took like 7 steps back and just like, oh, you see your bag, now I'm going to step forward.
And then I'll be gone.
Right.
I'll be gone. But
what you have to do, and this is, it always makes me feel really good inside. If you ever see an elderly woman, you always grab her bag.
Every time.
And you just get, you kind of. I did it for a lady, and then I kind of scanned the room. Like, did anyone notice that I did that? Is anyone proud of me for doing that? Because I feel really good about it.
Of course.
And then another thing. Oh, jeez. Airplane food. Is disgusting, no? Is that just me being a picky eater? Or do you agree?
It's different for me because I've never been on that many far international flights where like I'll go Delta, they'll go bring those Biscuit cookies, which are phenomenal, and then like sodas and snacks. Like I've never got a meal really on a plane unless I was like 4 years old when I went to England.
Okay, so, all right. You've never had a meal. In my opinion, they're disgusting. They're gross.
Yeah.
And it's like, everybody eats it. I always refuse it because it's like, all right, a 4.5-hour flight. I know I'm about to fly. It's not like somebody ripped me off the street and they said, you're going on this plane. Like I'm prepared for it. Yeah. I know I'm going on it. I know airplane food sucks. So I usually, maybe I'll eat something before or when I land and put my stuff away wherever I'm going, then I'll get something to eat. I don't need to eat within this 4.5-5 hours.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
But everyone does it.
I know. It's one of those things where, and especially if they, I can imagine the smell when they serve like fish. Oh, we're serving fish tonight on the plane. It's like, ugh, you're going to make this tin can in the sky. It's just
everything's like fish. It's like prison food, dude. And everyone's like, oh, great, let's do it. And I'm thinking, is it just me being a picky eater?
No.
On the flight there, right? You know how like if you've ever been seated and like nobody else is sitting in your row yet. You're eyeing everybody that's coming down
the
aisle.
Please not me. Please not my seat.
Or like, you know, you see like a pretty girl. You're like, oh, I hope. And then, but it's never that. I've never had that kind of luck. So I was in a seat where I was in the emergency exit row. I always do that.
Oh, it's smart.
Well, it's smart unless the plane's going down because I'm not reading the fucking manual.
Everyone right
here.
That
tells me how to open the door. I always get afraid on flights that someone's going to just be a psychopath and try to open it.
Just happened.
So whenever somebody's like going to the bathroom, I always have my eye on them. Like, are they going to the bathroom or are they making a break for the cockpit or the emergency door? Because I'm fully prepared to fuck somebody up every time.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
But so I actually have on this flight for whatever reason, I'm in the middle seat, but the window seat, there's no seat there. It's just space. And so I only have one possible person that could be sitting next to me in the aisle. And I'm sizing, you know, everybody that comes down, all right. And of course, it's a 6'8", 300-pound Cape Verdean man that comes and sits down next to me. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Whatever. Nice guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? You always start with like, how you doing? You know what I mean? But I don't want to talk to you.
No.
You know what I mean? I'm going to give you like a, like we're human beings.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a, how's it going?
Yeah.
But don't, that doesn't open the door for you to spark like a whole, you know what I mean? I don't need your family tree. I don't need, what? You are one of those people, 100%.
It happened when it happened when I was 4 years old. 4 years old. We went to London with the family because my cousins lived out there. And it was, we had one seat, 2 seats, and then my sister in a bassinet because she was
young. You remember 4?
No, my mom and dad told me the story.
So this is like word of mouth.
From my parents.
Yeah, okay.
From my parents.
Okay.
So there was one seat and then one row back was my mom, my dad, and my sister in a bassinet, but I'm 4. So the guy next to me, my dad goes, hey, can you switch with me so I can sit with my son? And you're going to sit one row back on the end. You don't even have to sit in the middle. You can sit in the end. So I can sit next to my son alone. And some French guy, we're traveling. He goes, I'm not trading. You Americans think you can get whatever you want. He goes, fine. He looks at me and goes, make friends with the man. That's what he said he told me to do. And before I even take off, hi, my name is Patrick. I'm from Falmouth, Massachusetts. We're going over here. We're going to England. We're going to this. Before takeoff, guy goes, okay, I'll switch. And that's like my parents' favorite story.
So you've always been like this. Since the beginning. Dad kind of like was like, Packy, get him.
Yes, you know pretty much.
Oh, that's great.
Because fine. But mind you, he now has to sit next to a baby on a flight to England that's 10 hours.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like,
that's another thing.
But I'm going, oh, he's like, okay.
You know how they have like adults only resorts?
Sandals.
They should have sandals. They should also have adults only flights. But I get it. You know what I mean? I'm not that big of a curmudgeon.
No.
But so the guy sits next to me and we're fine. But one place where I screwed up is if I'm already sitting, right, and I'm in the middle seat, you gotta establish dominance with the armrest.
These are mine.
And as far as airplane etiquette is concerned, if you're in the middle, you actually get both of those armrests because the person in the aisle gets their armrests on the right and they got the aisle next to them. So they can kind of, they can lean over and they're not shouldering anybody. The window seat person gets their armrest towards the window and they can also lean on the wall. So they have more freedom.
And they have window control.
Right. And so the middle person is at a disadvantage all around.
Yes.
So to kind of compromise for that disadvantage,
you get the
they're
courtesy.
Allowed both rests.
Correct. I firmly agree.
Right. But this man was a big man. And he immediately sat down and just established dominance on the armrest. And I've never felt like more of a square in my entire life for a 5-hour flight. So he established dominance and it was okay. It was fine. I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm like, the flight there is always different because you're excited about the destination.
Ugh.
The flight home is when you're like, oh, fucking, you know what I mean? It's a little more angsty.
Back to life.
And so he was fine up until the food came. His elbow was directly in front of my nose. He's out, both arms out, using the fork and the knife. Elbow in my face. And I had to give him like excuse me, sir. Elbow. Oh, sorry. And he fixed the correction. But the flight there was fine. Smooth sailing. No turbulence. I actually go on this website called Turby before I fly. And it tells me what the turbulence is going to be like throughout the flight. And so I had light turbulence here and there throughout the flight. No problem. But the flight home, it had moderate halfway through. Because then when I hit that first big drop, like you're on a roller coaster, I'm thinking like, does the pilot not want to live anymore? You know what I mean?
Yes,
is the pilot like, did his wife cheat on him? Is he at his wit's end?
I think about that stuff all the time.
Right. And now I'm eyeing people going up the aisles. And I had on the flight home, it's different because of the wind currents. You go at a different angle. So it's 6 hours home, longer flight home. And I think I used the bathroom twice. And so when I first used the bathroom, there was a guy just standing by the bathrooms, a fellow patron, not a flight attendant. And I went back for the second time, and he's standing again. And I'm kind of like, my 9/11 brain's turning, and I'm like, why is this guy standing up? Shouldn't the fucking stewardesses be doing their job and tell him to take a seat?
Yeah, of course.
I don't like him standing. You know what I mean? He's probably just stretching his legs, but my 9/11 brain's like, all right, keep an eye on him, Varela. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But yeah, the airports drive me nuts. What?
So what happened with the guy standing? Did anything come about it?
No, I'm alive. What do you mean? Like, he didn't crash the plane. He was just stretching his legs, dude.
I didn't know if that was like the...
Yeah, no, he made a break for the cockpit and I tackled him to the floor.
I didn't know if like it was like an air marshal. I don't know what's going on. No, I thought there was an end to it. Okay, so you're fine. You're good.
Fine, I'm good. Yeah.
You're good, but the flight home always has worse turbulence. Even from Florida, the flight home has more turbulence. It's like, ugh, I hate it.
Well, I think I've talked about on here, like when I first was adjusting to flying... And I was flying from the Bahamas to Fort Lauderdale, and the turbulence was so bad that the stewardesses had to stay strapped in the whole time.
Yes.
At one point, a backpack came flying up the fucking aisle.
Freaked me out.
And I drove home.
Oh, yeah. You told me. No, you didn't tell me that here. You told that somewhere else.
I remember I called my mother as soon as we landed. I said, Ma, that flight was scary. And she was like, it's all right. Just, get on your connected flight and you got to come home. And I was like, I think I'm going to rent a car and drive. She was like, no, that's crazy. Just sit, relax. You'll be okay. Just breathe. Maybe tell the stewardess on your next flight that you're a nervous flyer and they'll do what they can to make you more comfortable. And I was like, no, I'm already walking Enterprise. And I rented a freaking little fucking Infinity and I took 3 days. I made it a sightseeing tour.
Good.
I stopped in Daytona Beach, which was not that appealing. It kind of like was like gave me like Walmart vibes.
Is Daytona on the panhandle kind of like in the beginning of the panhandle?
I don't think it's in the beginning of the panhandle, but it's like it's on the same coast as Miami and Fort Lauderdale. It's just way more north.
Got it. That's a big bike week place. That's a
well,
big...
they have the NASCAR there, right?
Yeah, the NASCAR.
Yeah, I don't know if I just went at a bad time, but it was kind of like ghost townish.
Yep.
You know? And then I stopped in Savannah, Georgia. I stopped in South Carolina. And then when I stopped in Durham, North Carolina, and it happened to be March Madness when Duke was playing North Carolina in the tournament.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
You went?
No. I just went out like to the bars and stuff to
awesome.
Watch the game because North Carolina and Duke, they're in the same, they're both in Durham.
Correct.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
in the biggest, one of the biggest sports rivals, like.
Especially in basketball.
I say behind Red Sox Yankees, but they're pretty close to Red Sox Yankees when it comes to rivals.
Like, I'd say so.
Like they're huge. Yeah. And that must have been quite an experience. The bars too, the college bars must have been nuts.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
Nuts.
Yeah, I had a weird Tinder hookup. In Durham as well.
Hey, well.
I don't even know if I want to talk about it.
Patreon?
I'm such a degenerate. So I was like driving, you know what I mean, up
yeah.
to come to Massachusetts. And I had set my Tinder to Durham way before I was in Durham.
Okay.
Just in anticipation of that was going to be my stop. And yeah, I mean, I matched with a girl, and I'm, like, doing this all while driving, which is terrible. They say yes. Don't text and drive. Don't swipe on Tinder, find someone that's going to hook up with you for a one-night stand in your destination along the coast. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And,
while driving.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those situations where she didn't quite look like the pictures, and I went ahead with it anyways. I
said, all right.
Didn't feel great about myself afterwards.
But then you drove home.
And she brought... Mom, if you'll listen and just switch this off for the next couple of minutes, I'm going to give you a second. All right, now that my mom's gone. And so she brought like a vibrator with her to the hotel, which I've used those in my escapades before. But for a stranger to bring one.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was kind of like, yeah, a little too prepared for this. How often do you do this type of
stuff? You
do this
a good amount of times.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't want to get into details, but I wasn't proud of myself that I should have shut it down. I should have said, you know what?
Yeah.
You aren't the same person as the pictures. And
I
went ahead with it anyways.
You probably had a rough ride home with a donut you had to sit on. I get it.
What do you mean?
I'm just kidding.
No. I just was like kind of, you know.
Yeah. Not your style.
No, not my style, which it's not my style, but also I was a little ashamed of myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You get that kind of clarity after it's done where
yes.
you're like, what was I thinking? You know what I mean? When you're thinking with your papiche
yes.
and then your papiche gets what it wants and goes back into its shell and then your regular brain takes over.
Doesn't
and you're like,
Lil Wayne say it all the time?
What was I doing? What does Lil Wayne say all the time?
As soon as I come to my senses.
All right. Whoa.
That's
whoa,
what I'm
whoa,
saying. I didn't want to say whoa. The C word.
There's elderly people listening to this, dude. See how I said I was going to say post-nut clarity?
Yes.
But
yes.
instead of saying that, I said like, you know, have intercourse. You know what I mean? I kind of cleaned
figured,
it up a little
figured,
bit, and then you come over with, you know what Lil Wayne says?
I figured that's why, because of course you've heard that line a million times. So I was like, maybe we...
Yeah, I mean, but read the room. We're doing, you know what I mean? We're doing a show where our listeners might not want to hear you say come.
Yeah,
you know, and hopefully my mom like fast forwarded it enough where she didn't come back to you because she really likes you. I don't want her to look at you differently.
All right, then blank out the C word.
No, we're not.
It's not that C word. It's not that C word. It's not that C word.
We're not blank. We're not blanking out. We're not blanking out.
Oh, okay.
Especially if you said it. We're not blanking out, especially if you said it. Anyways, the trip itself.
Yeah.
Now that we got the airport and airplanes out of the way. The trip itself. No, there was one more thing about fucking airports that I wanted to talk about.
Observing. I know you were observing around the airport.
Oh. One of the biggest things I wanted to say. My parents, especially my father, they always, all right, you know what I mean? You go to your parents for stuff. Even when you're in your 30s, you still go to your parents for stuff, right?
Of course. To this day.
So I go to my dad and I'm like, how, you know. Because he's been to Sao Miguel before. I haven't. He flies this particular airline a lot, SATA, I think it's called. And it's like, what time should I get to the airport? Oh, international, always 3 hours. And I must have, in the last 3 years, I must have taken, at least 50 flights.
Yeah.
Any time that I've been that early, this is what happens. Even if the line is long at bag check, even if the line is long at security, I'm still sitting there for at least an hour, if not 2 hours. Because if bag check is quick and security's quick, that literally just took me 18 to 25 minutes. And now I'm just sitting there. You know, can't smoke because I've been through security already. You know what I mean? So yes. I got the Zins and I just sitting there. You know what I mean?
The difference is one of my favorite beers in the whole world is an airport beer.
All right. Okay. Airport beers are great. But my thing is.
You don't have to be there that early. I understand.
You don't have to be there that early. But also they say to you, well, you never know. And it's like, well, 50 flights later, I feel like I know. You know what I mean? I've never been in that situation. And it's like, I would rather go there an hour before my plane's going to board.
Risk it.
Every time. And for 50 flights, everything's fine. And I'm only spending an extra 30 minutes or plus, you know, 30 to 40 minutes in the airport than I need to.
I understand.
I'm checking in. I'm getting through security. I go over and you always look at the gate. All right, it's here. And then you go buy snacks, maybe a 17th neck pillow you purchase in your life. And then you board the plane shortly after that.
Yep.
I'd rather that happen than and sacrifice maybe one time I go and I fucking completely miss my flight.
Yeah, I understand fully. I mean, you're traveling alone. I get it. That'd be nothing but hell if I missed a flight with the whole family. That sucks.
Yeah, I guess it's a little different.
Yeah, if you fly with the family, like, and you never know what happens. You get halfway through security line. I got to go to the bathroom. And you're like, argh. So you get out of line. You have to go back to the end. Like, you just never know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have younger kids. My son's 11.
So it's different. It's like, yeah, yeah. Hey,
tie, fucking tied in a knot until we get through.
Until we get through. You'll be fine.
Right.
It's different. It's 100% different. I understand your point 1,000%. Like, I will risk it. If I've done it 50 times and made it on time 50 times, if I'm late the 51st and miss it, well, I had a great streak. I had a great run.
Right. Because you got to think about this.
All the time wasted. Right?
You think about 50 flights and let's just say 2 hours of wasted time per flight.
100 hours over 3 days, 4 days.
Think about wasted time. Like 100 hours on a plane, I could circle the earth like 5 times, no?
What are you really doing in those 100 hours you probably would have wasted?
Yeah. Who knows? But the thing is like...
You're right.
We got the airport stuff out of the way.
But now the trip.
Solo trip, which if you're listening and you've never taken a trip by yourself, I don't care how old you are. If you're 20 or you're 70 and you've never taken a solo trip, I highly recommend it for so many reasons. One, I feel like a lot of people struggle like being alone and sitting with themselves, right? And it's good practice to do that. Self-reflection, yada, 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 all that earthy, crunchy shit. Also, you don't have anyone saying, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Nah, let's go here. Or, all right, I'm still getting ready. I don't feel like doing that.
I'm tired.
Yeah. You don't have any of that.
I have that.
And then it's a good opportunity where you get this like weird sense of freedom where it's like, I'm in a country. Nobody knows me. I'm by myself. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like you experience the world in a different way and it's so fucking cool. And you get an opportunity to step outside of your comfort zone where it's like, all right, you know, I don't feel like being alone right now. And the only way I'm going to not be alone right now is if I just go up and introduce myself to people. Or spot conversations with strangers, you know what I mean? And ask the locals for a recommendation. And then maybe they end up, you know, taking me with them somewhere and showing me the local spots. But then when I want to be alone, I don't have any obligations because I didn't come with anybody. And I can just go have my alone time. I can read. I can hike. I can just be by myself. And one thing I realized about when I was there is small island like that. You know, kind of like a hidden gem. They're calling it now the Hawaii of Europe, but hidden gem. Not a lot of people, you know, go there, and it's a fucking beautiful place. And so it's kind of off the beaten path. And I was looking around. I was driving, you know, from one side of the island to the other. And I just saw this guy on the side of the road kind of loading stuff up into a pickup truck. Older guy, maybe in his 50s, 60s. And he just looked like so calm and just so at peace. I just got this vibe from him that he was just this like calm.
Island vibes.
And I was like, here's a guy who grew up on this tiny island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. His whole life. I don't know. Maybe he's gone to other countries and, you know, seen America or gone to Europe and, you know, seen some big cities over there, whatever. But, you know, whether he has or hasn't, he spent his whole life on this island, pretty much.
Very cool.
And it just got me thinking about, like, how wrong we're doing it in the United States. If you've never traveled outside of the United States, and I know some people have the mentality of, like, well, there's so much to see within our own country because we're such a big country. Like, California is so much different than Maine, and Maine is so much different than Florida, and Florida is so much different than North Dakota, and North Dakota is so much different than Texas. There's so many places to see, sure. But there's something about going to other countries and seeing the way that they live life. And then also, I know there's the, you could go to places and see slums and see how bad some people have it. But it's more so the mentality that people have where, and I can only speak for myself, right? And I'm sure there's a lot of people that feel the same way. It's like we're raised to, all right, we got to go to college, right? And if we don't go to college, we got to get into a field that's going to make us money. We got to try to make the most money as possible. And we need a nice house, and we need to drive a decent car, and we need this, and we need that, and we are accumulating, and we essentially work all year long and look forward to vacations maybe once or twice a year until we're fucking 65. And with all the shit they put in the foods nowadays and all the stuff going on in the world, it's like 65, you don't have much time left on this earth. You know what I mean? And I want to enjoy it with both my lungs and both my legs. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you see people in other countries where it's like just having an espresso at an outdoor cafe. Talking to their friends for hours, just going for a walk, just sitting by the ocean at the marina, just sitting on the side of a mountain surrounded by fucking like cows and shit. Just conversation, good food, having a beer, having an espresso, and just like sitting and talking and just soaking in your surroundings and being grateful for like the simple pleasures of life. And everyone's on the same wavelength. There's no status chasing. Yeah. There's no, you know, Hollywood, this, that bullshit. You know what I mean? Social pressures and, you know, clothes and cars and jewelry and summer houses and work, 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 work. Nope. Work over there is like secondary. Life comes first.
That's how like, that's how like kind of like in Pat, my brain, that work is that my career is, I have a weekday off and then I work every Saturday no matter what. So I always work Saturday. When I take that weekday off and I go places like, oh, one of my kids in school and what the other one, so I got to go here and here and here around town, run errands. I feel like a bum. I'm like, it's a Thursday. I'm just wearing sweatpants and a sweatshirt. I feel like a bum. That's how I'm grading my mind. But really I should be like, hey honey, let's go to the beach and just go look at the waves. Let's go do this. But I'm like, I gotta do something to feel like I'm not a bum, because that's how messed up my brain is, where it should be like, hey, I worked hard these last 3 days. I have a day off.
Right.
Let's enjoy my surroundings. Honey, let's go see a pond, because my younger one, I'll be with her alone. Let's go to the beach. Let's go walk the dog. You know, like something fun I should do. But it's in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, now I have a day off. Got to get something done around the house. Got to clean the gutters or rake the leaves.
Right.
Or,
right. And it almost gets to a point where like, just like soaking in your natural surroundings and like doing scenic sort of things and like just having conversation and drinking coffee and just kind of chilling out. Those things aren't stimulating enough because we're so go, 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 go.
All the time.
And then you say, well, I got to provide for my children. I got to provide for my family. And then what happens is your kids see that. And then when they get older, oh, well, I got to provide for my family. I got to. And this country is just, and I will say, to play devil's advocate in my own kind of realizations here, is that this is how this country was built, was through that mentality. Yeah. This country wouldn't have the great things that it does have if it wasn't for our work ethic. Because when we came over here, it was just freaking, you know, Indians and woods, and it was a freaking beautiful, magical place. But look what we built in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
These great cities and, like, you know, all this stuff to do and these great industries and these great companies. And look what we did with, like, cinema and comedy and, you know, the entertainment industry. And in it was only possible through that nonstop work first mentality. So I understand that. But there's just something about being in another country, especially a small remote place like that. And you see the way other people live and you see the stress levels. And then you also see, because of that, because of their lack of stress and because of the way that they live, the way that they treat people better. You know what I mean? I've never driven around where people kind of like let you go, and if you let them go, they throw their hazards on to send you a thank you. And maybe that's just Boston, but it's like, you know, and just like, if you need anything, they're there to help. You can go up to a stranger, say hello, eye contact. It's just like, was a different world. And you know, it helped kind of with my intention of the trip to kind of decompress and do some reading and do some hiking and stay off my phone and not be so wrapped up in social media and posting shit and just kind of like, you know, decompress and do some critical thinking about some changes I can make in my life and how to be a better person upstairs. Because the better, the more clear-headed I am and the better person I am, you know, in my way of thinking and my mentality, the better I'm going to treat people. And it's the butterfly effect, you know what I mean? And, yeah, I think mission accomplished. It was a beautiful place, and I did some great hikes and sightseeing and just, like, kind of sitting and being by myself still without worrying about all this shit, you know. And, of course, a week later, I have to fly home, and we're back to reality. But I think, you know, to carry some of that mentality with me in the way that I live my life, you know, is why trips like that are so important. And it's something that I definitely want to do more often. And yeah, one cool thing about having a kid at such a young age, where like my son's already 11 years old and I'm only 35. By the time he's in college, I'll be still in my prime, dude, just traveling the world, you know, unless I meet somebody that knocks me off my feet and they want more children, then I'll be the 60-year-old dad at my 10-year-old soccer games, and that's fine. But if not,
you'll still be in your prime.
I'm gonna be all over, but I'll be all over them, dude. If my son's in college and I don't have any more kids, I'm gonna see the fucking world, buddy. There's one thing, I've done some cool shit in my life, you know, from the best clubs in the world to the best restaurants to, you know, sexcapades with the most beautiful women and getting laid left and right. And I've done every drug known to man, and I've partied my ass off, and you know, I've been to some cool places, I've seen some cool things, you know, and then the more wholesome, fulfilling things, I've experienced all that sort of stuff. And there's nothing like being a dad, but I'll tell you, my favorite part of life is traveling and going to places I've never been before. Good. There's nothing like it. It's the best feeling.
I love that. I love that. I always love going to new places. I think it's great. Even if it's somewhere not too far, I just still think it's cool. Like, I just...
But I think you should do it more. I think you should make it a priority in your life. I think
I definitely should.
One, there's nothing like having something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So if you have a trip already planned, and it's like, if there's one thing that my father really did for me that I'm so thankful that he did it for me... And I think it's because he's from another country. So he has a lot of those views already, because he's coming from a place that wasn't as great as the United States, but the stress level was somehow lower. The poverty rate was higher, but the stress level was lower.
He's
coming from that place to a place like this, and he believes in the American dream and busting your ass and working your ass off. Work, 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 work. That's been his whole life. But one thing that he instilled in me was that fire for traveling and experiencing different cultures and just plopping yourself somewhere where you don't know the language and you don't know the culture and just learn about it and kind of vibe with the people there. If there's anything that you can instill in your children, other than the normal values that as a dad you'd want to instill. That's one thing that I think you should encourage with your children is traveling. So if you have that vacation time and you have that little extra money set aside, you know, down the road, fuck Disneyland. You know what I mean? It's like we're going to take you guys to Spain.
Yeah.
We're going to take you guys to Portugal. We're going to take you guys to, you know what I mean, some other country to experience another culture and how they live. I think it's such a great thing to instill in your kids.
Before the age of 10, I had been to England, Cozumel, Mexico, Jamaica, you know, the typical down there tropical islands, mm-hmm, but still they weren't America. And you could see things are different. Like, this isn't quite like our country, you know?
Right, right.
Like Cozumel and Grand Cayman Islands, and we went on cruises and stuff like that. So I was very lucky my parents could do that. We went on cruises and it was really cool. It was really fun. And I'd love to do that for my kids. Right now, financially where I am now, I say we always go on the blue collar vacation. Go visit the grandparents in Florida.
Water whiz. Yeah.
Grandparents in Florida.
Right.
Don't need pay room and board, not paying for a rental.
Yeah, but I mean, even that, even if the blue collar, going to Florida, going to places like that, but just like encouraging traveling, yes, and like, yep, realizing, you know, helping them realize like hey, there's a big world out there.
Yes.
And there's a lot of different viewpoints. There's a lot of different ways of life. There's a lot of different places out there and different types of people, and to just kind of broaden their horizons, because like traveling for me has opened up my eyes to like so many different things, dude. And I think it's a very important.
My buddy had an apartment in Falmouth, right? That was rent control, $500 a month, crazy. But every winter, he would go to Hawaii, live on the beach in Hawaii for every winter.
Yep.
And just pitch a tent. You could go pick fruit and then trade it into the meat market.
Yeah.
So like you bring the fruit in, they'll give you a piece of meat to eat for the night.
Right.
So go out in the jungle, collect a bunch of fruit, turn it in, get meat, make a fire, cook the meat on the fire, meet locals. Some locals in Hawaii weren't quite fans of tourists, others were. So he'd make friends with locals. You could find someone who'd be like, a local would be like, yeah, I'll bring a boar hunting. So if you got a boar, you can get the meat and at least have a couple nights of food. Like, and he'd do that for all winter long. Come back to Cape Cod in the summer, have a Cape Cod summer. October would come around.
He was doing it right. And that's another thing that you made me think of is when you mentioned like some people aren't fans, some people, yeah, you know, help tourists out, whatever, yeah, whatever. Is there's something about being in a country where English isn't the primary language, where you'll run into some people that know some words in English or can, yeah, speak English, but a lot of people don't. It helps me whenever you hear like people degrade people that come to this country the right way legally and learn the language, or you know what I mean, or if someone can't speak English great, or they have like a funny accent or whatever it is, it's like, have you ever tried to go to another country and you can't speak the language? You feel like such an idiot. I feel disrespectful. I feel, you know what I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's not easy to go into a place knowing that you're a foreigner and you can't speak the language and you got to ask for something. It's uncomfortable.
It's very.
So it helps like with how I look at people that can't speak the language. Because if you come from another country and you speak your native tongue and you're learning English and you can get by within a conversation, holy shit. Like,
good for you.
Good for you, because it's not easy.
I can tell you one thing. I bet there's more foreigners who know English than Americans that know any other foreign language.
Oh, 1,000% by a mile, dude. But English is... that's not so... To play devil's advocate again, I like to do that.
I know.
That's not so much like our fault, but also because like the entertainment industry, music, movies,
Michael Jackson,
television,
like,
we're just so influential in that department around the world.
Yes.
That it's more encouraging for people to learn the language, because we have our grips around social media. We have our grips around movies, television, music, you name, yeah, it. So people want to learn, you know, and for a long time, you know, I don't know so much anymore, but we're the destination that a lot of people want to move to for, yeah, a better life.
Of course, the American dream.
Right.
And that's where, imagine how many movies we're missing out in foreign languages that are probably such good movies. Like Parasite, remember the movie Parasite? Like that came out and won multiple awards, but many people I know didn't watch because like, I don't want to read the subtitles. And
oh yeah, I mean, some of my favorite movies have subtitles. Like one of my favorite movies, City of God.
Yes.
Takes place in Brazil.
Yeah.
There's a movie called Tropa de Elite that takes place in Brazil. Oh, so good, dude. Yeah. It's with the guy, you know who the guy that plays Pablo Escobar in Narcos?
Yes.
So it was his first like big hit movie where he played he was like in the Brazilian military police.
Okay.
The guys that just go in and like wipe out gang members.
Yeah.
Like not the regular police.
Trying
that
to take down the militia.
Up. Yeah, yeah. No, they're like the militia. They're like the military guys that like the police get bought off and shit, but the elite squad, like,
okay,
they don't get fucked with.
Yeah.
They're like basically the Navy SEALs of Brazil that go in and just shoot first and ask questions later. And that's what the movie was about. Oh, it was so dope, dude.
That's a good one.
So dope. And then Life is Beautiful.
Never seen that.
One of the best films you'll ever watch in your life. Takes place in Italy. It's about when, you know, one of the most famous Italian actors of all time. It's just like love story of him chasing this woman with this woman around. And it's like a really like, you know, touchy love story. And then finally they fall for each other and they have a kid. And then Nazi Germany comes in and takes over and they get sent to a concentration camp. And it's one of the saddest, most beautiful movies you've ever seen
Holy
in your life.
Crap.
Like big, like life lesson type movie. And then Parasite, other movies like that.
What was the Mel Gibson movie he did on the Native American tribe?
Apocalypto?
Yes.
Yeah, but that was like, they barely spoke in that movie. That guy was just running the whole time.
Such a good movie.
Great movie.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, yeah, but like you didn't even, there was no like.
There was some of them interacting.
There was some
with each
dialogue, but really it was just
most action,
running through
mostly
the
action.
Jungle, dude. Yeah.
Because that like, that the thing with the pyramid where they chop the heads off and roll down, like that's real. That's based off real stuff, which is insane. Absolutely insane. But anyway, speaking of after that, I know we talked about your birthday earlier. 35?
Oh, fuck. Halfway to 70, dude.
That's quite a jump. I actually got you something.
What'd you get?
It's a nice gift. It's a sentimental gift.
Is this like a gift that you like you wanted to give me on the podcast?
Yes.
Okay, give it to me.
Yes. I think it's great.
Okay.
I think it's awesome.
I'm already fucking cringing.
Let's see here.
I like your vest.
Thank you. Horsepower, baby. It's Polo. That's why I said horsepower. I got it at the outlet. It's really
give
cheap.
Me the freaking gift.
Okay. So this kid at my work does these molds. I said, you know what? I'm going to get something for Anthony.
Oh, so that's very nice of you, Pat.
They're nice coasters.
Nobody cares, Anthony. Logo, podcast.
Coasters.
Coasters.
Yeah.
You know what? That is the most thoughtful gift I've gotten from a friend, I think, in my entire life.
Happy 35.
Because we don't do that as
I know,
guys don't
I
buy
know.
Each other gifts.
But I was like, hey.
Kind of gay. But like, but like, I am actually taken back a little bit.
Yeah,
that
man.
Is the most thoughtful thing
yeah.
a friend has ever done for me. I want to shake your hand.
Hey, I got you, bro.
Thank you, Packy.
For
appreciate
sure.
that.
For sure.
I appreciate that
My buddy Elgin at work got into these molds, and I was like, dude. Nobody cares, Anthony.
That is very, very nice of you. I'm actually, like I said, taken back.
Right? You wow. have friends over. You have a nice coaster.
Little coaster. I don't have friends, but yeah, yeah.
it's perfect.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Becky.
I thought you'd like it, man.
Wow. You actually did really good. I was surprised. I was like, here we go.
Something corny.
Got me a gift. Dude.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm actually... I'm kind of blown away right
this
now.
This is my thoughtful gift.
Wow. You are a good friend.
I'm a good friend.
Jesus, I'm such a bad friend.
You're not.
You're a good friend.
Yeah, man. Dude, it was one of those things where he got in, Elgin Stewart, if you ever need anything, look him on Facebook. He got into these molds and he was like, dude, I'm making coasters, all different designs. I said, can you get logos you think put in them? He goes, yeah, absolutely. He goes, just get the logo, laminate them. They have a laminating thing at the dealership, laminate it and give it to me. I said, great. I said, do like a gray for the regular logo. And then like I said, do a red and blue for the podcast one.
Well, you know what's cool about this
what?
Is that I will always cherish these.
Good.
And when I look down on them, I will say, Packy got me these as a fucking birthday gift. I don't think I've ever had a friend get me a birthday gift.
This was like a Nerf gun.
You know what I mean? Like I've celebrated yes. birthdays at like, you know, bars and a friend's got me a beer or like a lap dance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, this is a thoughtful gift. I appreciate it.
I try to go all out, man.
When's your birthday?
3 weeks ago.
No, it wasn't. Yes, was it really? I didn't even say happy birthday to you. I didn't even wish you a happy birthday.
It's okay.
Oh my God, dude. I'm a fucking terrible person. People watch my stuff and they see like, oh, Anthony started a charity, raised $100,000. He's so nice. He's so funny. I'm a fucking prick, dude. I'm a selfish person.
Hey, I'll be real with you. I didn't remember it was your birthday till I get the Facebook notification that says Anthony Varela's birthday today. I'm like, oh, it's Anthony's birthday. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get these for the pod and get them
for
him. Yeah, man.
Wow, and I didn't even say, I don't think I uttered the words happy birthday.
You did. You did.
Did I tell you happy birthday?
Because we filmed on the 30th last time,
yeah.
And my birthday was 2 days before, and I showed you the shirt my mom got me of the...
Okay, so I said happy birthday.
You said happy birthday.
Okay.
You said happy birthday. You did, you did, you did.
All right,
you did,
all right, all right.
You did.
All right.
Good, I'm telling you, you did. Yeah, man.
And you turned 32?
33.
33. Larry Legend.
Man. That's right. Larry Legend year. Right over there.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even want to...
But it's one of those things where if you think of the people that's listening to us, it's like, they're like, you guys are complaining about being 33 and 35. If I could go back.
Sure. And like people are listening that are 100 listening to them say that and go, if you only knew. It's like, you can always say that. But listen, I'm 35. Yeah. All right. When you were 35 listening to this now at 50, you probably said the same fucking thing.
When you were
it just feels like yesterday. Yes. I was in a fucking high school, dude.
When you were 35, there was no red 40 in all your food, dude.
Oh, don't even get me started on that.
California banned all the colors. Blue, whatever it is. Red 40, yellow 5. All that's banned in their
schools. Just bring back Newports. Ban all the fucking... ban all the Lucky Charms and Fruit Loops you want. Just give me my menthol cigarettes.
My uncles say, they said.
I'm in the process of quitting, though. I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this because I don't like to talk about my love life too much. But I met a girl.
Okay.
That I'm kind of interested in.
Okay.
I don't want to say kind of. I'm pretty interested.
Okay.
And she told me, you got to quit. So if you want to ever date me and you want me to take this seriously, you got to quit smoking. I'm not interested in dating a smoker. So I said to myself, this is the first time it's getting in the way of something. I understand, like, I could get cancer and die, like, that's down the road.
Yes.
It's getting in the way of something now. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to try to cut down. And I've been able to cut down a little bit, so...
So that's where with me is like, I feel like it's such a cop-out excuse. But when people go, dude, you got to stop smoking. I go, well, you know, I've had bigger vices. So like, this is kind of my lowest vice of them all.
Right.
And that's my cop-out when.
Right. It's like telling a serial killer to stop littering. It's like, I stopped killing people. Yes. So let's just,
you know,
if I want to throw a fucking dunk straw out the window and kill a turtle, shut the fuck up.
That's what I'm saying. But internally, I know I'm like, I got to stop doing this because.
Yeah.
I know, like, when you wake up in the morning and cough, you're like, ugh, that didn't happen 10 years ago, you know?
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's I'm not going to lie. I'm not experiencing any negative side effects from it. I love it, dude. I love it. It's my escape during the day. But, you know, and then it's also, as a father, it's selfish of me. You know what I mean? It's like, how am I going to cut years off my
There's
life
so many
when
things.
I need to be here for as long as possible for my son?
Yeah. There's so many things. And I have two uncles that... One of my uncles says I invented smoking cigarettes. I invented it. I don't care what anyone says, I invented it.
Well, he's lying.
It
was invented before he was born.
Of
unless
course.
Your uncle's a vampire.
Of course. But that's his saying. He's like, that's how much I love cigarettes is that I invented them. Like, you have no idea when you were a kid. You have no clue. Blah, blah, on and on. He goes, if they find a cure to cancer, I am going to go out and buy a carton of Newport Lights. Both of them love Newport Lights.
But that's like saying, like, I love chicken wings so much that I invented chickens.
It's his brag.
Right.
It's his brag. He was like, I love cigarettes. And to this day, I do. He goes, but the second I heard someone in our family had one little case of minor cancer, he goes, that's when I stopped.
Well, it started with me trying to be cool in high school. Where it was like, you know what I mean? I remember I started to, I was like, I misbehaved and stuff like that. And I enjoyed having that reputation as like a rebel.
Bad boy.
And so I was like, what else can I do? Okay, cocaine? Sure. Cigarettes? Bring it on. And I just tried to be cool. And and then, you know, you use nicotine, you get addicted to it.
And then it starts just chasing that first buzz. And then to this day, though, the first.
They don't do anything. They do nothing.
Not the first one of the day?
Nothing. It's just, they're just, quieting the need. That's but true. It's like if I didn't have the need, they're not doing anything besides quieting the need. So if I eliminate the need, there's no difference. They don't do anything.
But that's what's so bad about that. I feel like that's what's so bad about the vapes too. Is that like?
Oh, I'd never do that. I never do that.
I sleep with that thing on me.
Yeah.
That thing is like, that thing's on the nightstand. And then if I fall asleep with it on my stomach and I wake up and go like this, my wife goes.
Yeah. When I see someone, I'll vape when it's like convenient, when I like can't go outside or like, you know, there's one right there or airports or something like that. But when I see someone that's like a vapor, it's like, to me, it's like they're putting a tampon up to their lips. It's like, man up and smoke cigarettes. It's like, true. Don't do anything.
But the thing is, I don't know why. It's just, you know what really when it started? So my wife got pregnant and I was like, I don't want to give her secondhand smoke. But he's like, dude, just try a Juul. And I was like, oh my God, this thing's delicious.
Smoking a car battery.
Oh, it was so good though. It tasted like mangoes. Like, this is delicious. And then like that'd be normal. I'd be just ripping the vape. And then like the second couple beers come into play, that's when it's like, hey, who's got a cigarette? Like, I only got a Parliament. Don't care. Send it my way.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, I'll smoke mulch rolled up into a cigarette with a filter on it.
Yeah. It's, but that's what compared from Newports that just bring back Newports, Marb Reds just taste like earth. It's just like you're tasting smoking earth. Ugh.
It tastes like you're kissing a homeless man. Like,
it just fucking but gross. But also, a Marlboro menthol doesn't taste like a Newport either.
No.
Tastes like a peppermint stick.
Nothing like
Newports. Where Newports are right in between the two, where it's just its own entity.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing about vapes is like, we don't even know yet.
The long-term effects.
We don't even know, dude.
And that's, you know what I'm scared about? I'm not even scared about that. I'm scared about the long-term effects that I did when I got Vivitrol. You know,
sure.
Yeah, you know what Vivitrol did? What it does?
What?
So Vivitrol links on your receptors in your brain where like your happiness comes, where your dopamine goes. So dopamine, when you get excited, your dopamine goes pew, 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 and your receptors accept it. So when you get high on drugs and stuff like that, your receptors go crazy. That's why they say drug addiction is so like up and down when it comes to your emotions, where Vivitrol blocks that. So if you're getting your dopamine receptors blocked, is there a long-term effect to that?
I don't know.
That's
well. I was always under. So
but
I
remember
was,
we talk about how I haven't cried in a long time.
Yeah, but I got Vivitrol too, and I cry. I cry on a nightly basis watching fucking military dads come
I'm
home.
Sorry,
to their kids.
Yeah. Don't leave me.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
song comes.
So
like,
I don't think it's.
I don't know, dude. I've always that's my.
I cry sometimes, like during scenes of movies that like weren't even like written to make somebody cry. You know what I mean? It just like reminds me of something.
Was he leaving?
I don't full blown, but I like feel it, and
you get the hot, feel it behind the eyes.
What's that sound? Oh, we're right next to the highway.
Yeah.
That guy's flying. I heard that with headphones on.
That's like 300 yards away.
Yeah,
400 yards away.
He needs to get pulled over.
Yeah,
for sure. He's putting lives at risk.
For sure.
All right, everybody. So I did a thing for my Patreon subscribers, for the people that are subscribed for the bonus content. If you don't know already, when we wrap up our regular episode, we go on a lot longer and release that episode for only the people that are subscribed to my Patreon. So one thing that I introduced for my Patreon subscribers is their ability to leave me a voicemail. Now, I kind of left this open-ended. I said, you can leave a voicemail with like subjects you want Packy and I to talk about. Maybe it was something we touched on a little bit and you want us to elaborate a little bit more, or you want to tell us a story of something that happened to you. And we kind of just left it up to them to just leave a voicemail for whatever they want. So we're going to go through a couple of those now. And again, if you want the ability to leave me a voicemail, it's only $5 a month. Go over to Patreon and subscribe. Thanks. And the first one, let's go ahead.
My name's Heather Gossi from Indiana. On my 28th birthday, so 12 years ago, I was in a local metal band mosh pit incident, and I shattered my ankle. My friends loaded me into the car. They took me to the hospital. They had to reset my ankle before I could have surgery to fix it, and they gave me Dilaudid. Some other stuff, I don't know, whatever killed Michael Jackson. And apparently I started rapping while they were doing that. And I started rapping and calling everybody the N-word. What up, my N-word? And there was a black nurse there. Apparently she loved it, so it was great, fine. Yeah, interesting story. Good times, love the show. Okay.
All right. All right, Heather.
Okay.
Heather was like, oh, perfect. They started a voicemail thing. Let me talk about the time that they gave me Dilaudid and I started calling everybody the N-word. I've been waiting for an opportunity to get this story out to the masses. Here's my opportunity to do so. What a story, Heather. She started off strong with I was in a mosh pit.
Yeah, wild.
Broke my ankle. Friends had to lift me into the car. They gave me whatever killed Michael Jackson, and I started calling I started rapping the N-word to everybody.
Pretty insane.
Wow.
Pretty insane, but hey, I'll tell you, when that Dilaudid hit, probably really wanted to rip a cigarette, huh? Get that Dilaudid.
I guess. That's Packy's takeaway.
Oh.
That's Packy's takeway.
Of course. Okay.
Let's go on to the next one. Let's go on. Jesus. Your takeaway better bring something to the table other than that next time.
Oh.
Hello, this is Nicole from Austin, Texas. I don't know if you guys can really use this or not, but I saw this message and I wanted to share. When you guys were talking a few episodes ago about the French pole vaulter guy, I had actually not really heard of that and not watched the clip of it. And it just so happened I was like in the room with my husband and I was like, have you heard about this French pole vaulter guy thing or whatever? And he had, but I hadn't. So we watched the clip and I was like, you know, to be honest, I can't really tell the difference between the twigs and the berries there. But you know what this guy should be doing is marketing a line of male enhancement supplements. And my husband was like, that's a great idea. Women would buy the shit out of that stuff. And I just looked at him and I was like, women wouldn't be buying that. Are you insane? It would be all men buying that. And he was like, whatever. And then meanwhile, this motherfucker, my husband, just a few days ago, or before this, had bought some kind of goddamn Chuck Norris vitamin supplements off of Amazon that were like $75. I'm like, you know, yeah, sure. It's women that are the suckers. Anyway, I will call back in a couple of days if I can think of something to share. All that I can think of off the top of my head straight away is, I work in a public library, and let me tell you what, there are some funny fucking things that happen there. Anyway, really love the podcast. I love it when it's just you and Packy talking, and you guys do, like, some topical stuff, some, like, the penguin penis thing. It's like my relaxing podcast that I walk and I listen to it, and I just chill and calm down, and I don't have to think really, really hard about it, and it's just fun and light. So anyway, thanks a lot for that, and look forward to more episodes.
All right, scroll up. What was this young lady's name? What was her name? Nicole from Austin, Texas. So from what I'm gathering of her voicemail, her two favorite takeaways from the podcast so far both involve penises.
Yes, it does.
The two things she took away both involve penises. And she left us hanging with the first part of the story. Her husband. She came back about the penis pills. Oh, let's hear it.
Oh.
Hey, this is Nicole from Austin again. Sorry, I promise I won't spam this line, but I thought of something really interesting to tell you. So you know, you talked about your like rehab story and like drug journey and stuff and whatnot. I was actually in rehab earlier this year for a month. I've been 8 months and 16 days sober now, but I was in there with stepdaughter. At the time, I did not know she was stepdaughter. She was a fucking bitch. And I figured out who she was once I got out and have been real tempted. Real, real tempted. But, whatever. We're all part of the recovery community. But, I was in rehab with stepdaughter earlier this year. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
All right.
Animosity. That might be a cut.
Hold on. So, first of all, what I was saying, the first episode she left, did the Chuck Norris penis pills, how did those go for your husband? Did you guys have a good time? But for this second clip, you know, when you're in treatment, you're really not supposed to talk about who you're in treatment with unless it's like your husband. Yep. Okay. Look, I was in there with such and such. Okay. That's one thing. But we might have to bleep that out. Just
bleep it, yeah.
We absolutely have to. That's animosity.
Yeah. So then we'll say she was in there with a very famous person's stepdaughter.
Yep.
And we're going to bleep out whose stepdaughter that was.
Yes.
Because somebody I've been in rehab myself, you know what I mean? If I wasn't comfortable with the world knowing about that, I wouldn't want people to talk about it on the podcast.
Not a chance.
And no shade to Nicole,
at
you know
all,
what I mean?
At all. You're probably new.
Right, and congratulations on the sobriety. But
very happy for you.
God forbid, we really hope you never end up back in treatment again, and this is the last time you ever have to do so. But if you do, you should probably keep quiet about who you were in there with.
Probably new to the program.
Yeah, yeah.
Animosity is a thing in the program where it's called Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous for a reason. It's supposed to be anonymous.
Well, treatment isn't anonymous. You know what I mean? You're just supposed to respect people. Like, people that work there can't talk about it because of HIPAA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous shouldn't be confused with the treatment center.
That's true. That's true. Because you go to...
Oftentimes, you go to treatment and they encourage you to take part in programs like that.
That's absolutely right.
The treatment center itself isn't anonymous. So it's not like she's... You know, it's not like she worked there. She was a fellow patient.
That's true.
So she can technically talk about whoever the hell she wants that she was in there with, but it's not really ethical. It's not really, it's frowned upon, you know, for people to do that sort of stuff. And she doesn't help. So we're going to,
yes,
even though that would be an opportunity to kick this podcast up a notch if we revealed who she's talking about.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? But
I don't want him mad at me.
No. It would definitely do numbers, dude.
Through the roof.
But we can't. But I wouldn't sacrifice my moral compass for views.
Me neither.
You know what I mean? I would to some extent. But anyway, let's go on.
Bridges right
That's
now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's go on to the next one.
Next one. This one's from Z.
Z.
Hello there. It's Morzy. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love the show, boys, but I cannot overstate how hilariously enraging it is listening to you two talk about music. I'm no music snob, but when you're asking each other if Behind Blue Eyes is the Beatles, or you bring up Sam Smith and Packy belts out a "Take Me to Church," I've never wanted to throw my phone out the window so badly while also laughing so hard in my entire life. But with all your recent talk about nostalgia and jobs, I'm very surprised Packy didn't bring up what he used to tell people what he wanted to be when he grew up. I hope he remembers. It involved a very special type of vehicle, and I still think about it every time I see one. And I know you're looking for topics of discussion, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on, in general, what your dream job would have been or what you think you would have been good at. Not something like NBA play or something crazy, but if things had just gone a little differently, or you could go back and shake yourself and say, focus on becoming this, what you think you would have excelled at. Thanks, boys. Love the show.
Mm. That's somebody I know.
Yeah, it must be.
You know?
Morzy?
That means I've known that person since I was a kid. Oh, my gosh. I know who this is. This is my neighbor I grew up with. This is my one nice. I graduated high school with. That's Morzy. Why I was like, Morzy. Oh, my gosh. I didn't recognize his voice. My dream job growing up is I wanted to drive a Napa truck, a truck with a hat. I wanted to drive a truck with a hat.
Any hat?
No.
Any hat?
Yeah, you wouldn't know unless
the Napa hat, the yellow and blue hat.
Do you remember the truck with the truck used to have a hat on it?
Yes, yes, yes.
That was my dream job. I want to drive a truck with a hat.
Oh,
that was my dream.
Still, you could still probably do that.
My boy Morzy, that's my guy.
That was your dream job? I think that speaks volumes on like.
That's why it was
just your caveman aura that you give off. I don't know.
We were also in first grade. We went around the room and they said, what do you want to be when you're older, in front of a whole school? And I said, I want to be a bartender and gym teacher like my dad in first grade. So that's why everyone was like, what?
But then you're like, no, not that. I'm changing it. I want to drive the hat trucks.
The Napa hat trucks is what I wanted to be. But I can't believe you remember that, Morzy.
I think also Morzy said he kind of worded it where if you could go back, what do you think you would be good at? Like if you could start over and really focus on a certain area in school and become that when you got older, knowing what you know now about the adult you've turned out to be, what do you think that you would have done different? Like, is there any job that you would have gone back to set out to be?
It's hard to think about that. It's really hard to think about that. I don't know. Definitely something in the sales finance division for sure. Something with math related. That's what was one of my strong suits was math. So definitely somewhere in that range. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'd be somewhere in Boston working in some, like, who knows? Like,
yeah, I always said I was going to be a jeweler, like my father, because my father's always owned a jewelry store. And then, I mean, I always used to say NBA. I think every kid says, like, professional athlete or something like that. But I think if I were to go back, like, knowing what I know now, first of all, I would have waited until I was in my 20s to try drugs. But also, I think I would have made a good psychologist.
Yeah.
But they don't make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing where it's like, you know, I want to do something that makes a decent amount of money at the same time. But I think I would have, like, really pursued comedy.
Yeah.
I think stand-up comedy and, like, you know, whether it was television, whatever it is, because my ability to be able to make an entire classroom erupt in laughter, there was no better feeling. I was so good at doing it that I should have said to myself, like, screw, like, I should focus on it. You know what I mean? But, hey.
But it's one of those things where, do you think now, you could still do that now. You definitely could. But do you think you could be able to, if you went out and did a comedy show and you bombed and it did terrible, you didn't get as many laughs, would you go back and do it again? Or would you be like, I'm done with that forever?
Knowing like my attitude about life, I probably would have said, this maybe isn't for me. You know what I mean? But I honestly have so much confidence in my ability to make people laugh. If you give me a microphone and you put me in front of a room full of people, there's no way I won't get at least a couple of laughs.
You will. Absolutely. And that's where I feel like if you did a show.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I've been going to a lot more stand-up shows now. And I feel like, you'll go to a stand-up show and you'll see fucking 4, 5, 6 comedians, and I'll maybe like one of them out of all. It seems like it's like a lot of theater kids.
Yes.
That, like, you know what I mean? Like, couldn't really make it into acting, so they're going to try stand-up because it's kind of theaterish.
Yes.
But they're just, like, not fucking funny at all. Yes. They're just kind of fucking nerds.
I'm not the funniest person by any means, but I watch comedians sometimes. I'm like, I think I'm funnier than that. I make people laugh more than this.
And that's comedy is a very to each his own type of thing, where it's like, it's not every comedian's going to be everybody's cup of tea. You know what I mean? And the really, really successful comedians tend to appeal to more audiences than just a niche audience. But, you know, there's always going to be some crowd for some comedians. But I've been going to comedy shows where it's like, these are fucking geeky theater kids that just couldn't make it in acting.
Yep.
And now they're trying stand up. They're never going to make it. They're not fucking funny. Go be a chef or something. Like, what are you doing?
But see, it's good you know that, because I feel like people don't understand that about comedy, is that, like, you can't tell someone what's not funny. Because, like, I can't tell you what's not funny, because that's not what comedy is. You can't tell me what's not funny. If I think something's funny,
right,
I think it's funny. That's comedy.
Yeah, like how there's listeners who probably think that you're funny. You know what I mean?
Correct.
And I can't fucking stand it. You know what I mean?
I knew that was
like, we love Pecky. He's amazing. And you're an asshole, Tim. But it's like, there's an audience out there that loves Pecky. And I knew there would be.
Yeah,
and that's why
it.
I had
you
on.
Said it.
I knew
you
there.
Said it.
You
said it. But people... He's not being an asshole. He's my friend. That's what friends do. It's our relationship.
All right. We don't need to get into all that all over again. Let's listen to the next one.
Yeah,
we'll save that for the counselor.
This one's from Mike.
What's up, guys? It's Mike. I've been listening to you guys from the beginning. Very similar stories to both of you, which is why I enjoy your podcast.
Fuck yeah.
As Pecky, I'm 6 years now, opiate-free, all that. But I enjoy a good poop story, and I believe you could do it all episode long. I have a few very similar ones. There was one with eating too many Vicodins myself on a work site. Had to go, left the job site, went to a gas station, wasn't coming out, tried to pull it out, not working out too well, and then went to the nearest CVS and had to enema myself in front of a gas station and run out screaming and crying. That was one instance.
Mike.
But I find them all just as funny, and I could definitely hear a full episode on it. You guys are doing a great job, and keep up the good work. And I do like the double podcast when you and Pecky are together. Solos are always good, but it's just nice having that feel of another guy with you. I don't know. For some reason, it It really resonates with me. But great job, guys. You guys are doing awesome. Keep it up.
Well, thanks for the kind words, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
And rough poop story, Mike.
Yeah, oh.
I'm glad he's able to laugh at it now.
I know, that
sounded like you're enemying yourself in front of a gas station and you're running away crying. to be able to look back and laugh, good for you.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Came a long way. Yeah. Congratulations, 6 years. Love it.
I think, I told my poop story. If I had to enema myself, I think I would have just kept that one.
It's
tight
funny,
to the chest.
Because he's probably been listening since the beginning, and we talked about coffee enemas way earlier in the beginning. So
right.
He probably clicked then, and then we started. He's like, oh, this is all linking up.
When Mike lost his enema virginity,
that brought back memories.
Right.
You should try coffee next time, Mike. See,
coffee enema. Maybe wake you up a little bit. Well, but by the sounds of it, Mike's enema days are over.
Good job, Mike. A little traumatized. Good for you, Mike.
Keep up the good work, Mike. We appreciate the call.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Is that it? Oh, we did good.
Love it.
Those
that was awesome.
All right. So we're going to cut this episode and jump over to the Patreon version of the podcast. And if you're listening and you're not subscribed to the Patreon, the link's right in my bio. You can subscribe for as little as $5 a month. If you want to contribute more, that'd be fucking awesome. But if you don't want to and you just want to do the regular five, less than a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, come on down and you get a ton of bonus content, the extra podcast footage, and you can also call in and leave a voicemail for us. Thanks for listening, guys. That's this week's episode of Nobody Cares Anthony Podcast. Until next time.
Thanks, all. Love you.